You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Welcome
to Theater Geeks Anonymous,
the podcast about Broadway flops, scandals, and new work.
I'm your host, Ebony Vines.
And I'm your host, Pamela Shandro.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the Theater Geeks Anonymous podcast
on the Broadway Podcast Network and all your favorite podcast listening apps.
Thank you.
Yay, we're recording. It's been so long, Ebony.
What am I supposed
to say? I know. Welcome.
What's up, Theater Geeks?
What is up? It has been a very long moment.
At least a long time since we recorded, but not, it's never as long for the people who actually are listening.
we thought ahead and we had a huge cache of episodes that you all have been listening to. So it's been, I think what, maybe like 3 or 4 weeks since the last episode has actually been published. Mm-hmm. So this is a special treat though, because now we're all doing it live. Every single one of us.
Boom, boom, boom. You're going to be so excited. You're just going to be like, oh my gosh.
You're going to be like, whoa, hit, whoa, hey, whoa. That's amazing. Ebony, this is a special episode that we're doing today.
It really is. I am so excited about this episode because in the summer of 2020, I first heard about this documentary. And it's called Uprooted, and you all can watch it on HBO Max, and it is about the history of jazz dance. And so I saw it back then when we were only having like virtual film festivals, and I loved it so much. I was like, I wish it were longer. I could just be inside of this world for like days. and then I saw it two other times. So I've seen it three times. Because I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah, I watched it twice this week. Because obviously I had to for the podcast and that was also interesting. But like I finished it and I went, wait, there was so much information. I need to watch this again. Like I had to go back and like listen again because there was so much that I was able to kind of like grasp onto the first viewing.
Yeah.
But then the second time through, yes, those points still really hit hard, but I was able to like get so much more information. It was really, really it's a fantastic documentary.
Yeah.
Definitely watch it. But the reason we are here today recording is because we have some of the creatives here with us in the virtual studio.
So exciting. So exciting. Yes. So first I'd like to introduce Lisa Dunmall Reeve, and she's going to introduce herself and what her ties are to this fantastic documentary.
Thank you, Ebony and Pamela. That was quite an intro. I love it. I love you both already. Thank you for having us. My name is Lisa Dunmall Reeve. I was the producer of Uprooted.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kadeva Wong, and I'm the director of Uprooted. Lovely to meet you both.
You too.
You too.
Hello, I'm Zach Nemerin. I'm the original concept guy, co-creator with everybody, and I did a lot of the additional choreography for the film.
It's amazing. Yeah. And just so everyone knows, like Kadeva and Zach are in England, and so kind of them, like with, you know, the time differences and everything, and so we're just excited to have all three of you here to talk about this documentary that, like, if I were the marketing, I'd tell everyone about this documentary. I just really, really I love it. It's just so informative. I learned so much, like so much. And also, you know, it's interesting because Pamela and I had done right after the big racial reckoning of 2020, we had done this episode because I was just like really fired up about like the history of theater. And so it was interesting to also watch like this documentary and how it is so purposeful about showing the erasure of the Black community from dance and how much they have contributed to dance. And I like, it just really, like even some of the things that were talked about, I talked about in that episode of our podcast. And then I just learned so much more. So if one of you would like to start and telling us how it all came together, like the seed of the idea, and then how you all moved forward. Zach, you want to go?
Yeah, I'll go. I'll go. it's an incredibly long story that I'm just going to zip through, really. So probably about 6 or 7 years ago, I decided to go back and do a degree as a mature student. I'm 40 now. And I was doing a degree in musical theatre, and you know, for the thesis at the end, I had to kind of define myself as an artist, and I am a musical theatre performer and have been for 20, or was for 20 odd years, and now I'm more of a choreographer. But I suddenly kind of realised my mentor died, Jackie Mitchell. She died. She passed away sadly. A lot of other people, choreographers and people that had taught us over the years, were beginning to kind of pass away. And I was like, oh, who's going to document all of these people? Like, once they go, you know. Mm-hmm. And so then I was having a conversation with Gadifra, and we were actually working in a theatre in the Savoy Theatre, actually in the West End at the time. And, you know, we were having these conversations whilst I was like, naked, doing a quick costume change and all this kind of business. And so that's how it kind of came about, really. And you know the aggravation, I guess, you know, even you know, 6-7 years ago, I guess Kadifa and I were feeling the aggravations of kind of not necessarily being included all the time, or you know, or seeing people do the work but not really knowing where it came from.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of how, in a nutshell, that's kind of how it started. And then me and Kadifa went traveling. I remembered that Lisa Donmal Reeve was in America and had turned into a film producer. So we're like, right, Lisa, we need to talk to you immediately. And so we did, and Lisa literally just fell into it. She was like, yes, absolutely, but I want it bigger. I'll let her explain a bit more about that. But she wants, I want you to do everything about jazz dance. Everything, the whole story. And we were like, okay, let's go.
Bigger project than you probably anticipated at first.
And also like my naivety, but I always go by instinct and gut. And so my background was also musical theater and educating dancers in jazz. So I was just like, oh my god, I love documentaries. I've never made one, but I know I thought I knew the subject matter. And so, but it excited me. And their pitch was, obviously I could feel Zach's passion. And I just met Kadifa. I'd known Zach for years before in London. And I just said, I just think it would be better if it's the whole kind of, we span the whole history. And that's, I mean, the genius, but also the naivety, because as we delved in, I was just kind of like, holy shit, this is deep and complex, and how the hell are we going to put this in one film? And it could, you know, there's bits that we skim over, but because either another film's already made of it, or we want people to actually be curious and then go and do the work themselves.
Yeah.
And also we'd love to then expand and do an episodic. So there's kind of many, many layers, but I guess we were like, why has no one done this? And then as the deeper we got into it, we were like, oh.
Said that you wanted to expand it. Is that already in the works to do episodics of this kind of docuseries?
We'd love to. We kind of, we know what we'd want to do. It's more about partnering or getting money.
Money. Yeah.
To be very blunt. But you know, we haven't really even started to pitch that yet. We just wanted to get to the release of HBO Max, and then now going and trying to find the right people worldwide to distribute, because we'll do it territory by territory probably. And then there's the educational side. And so there's so much going on. And what you see, plus Kimberly Browning, is kind of it. We're a very small team. I'm very proud of us.
Remarkable, though, the number of people that you were able to kind of get on board to do these interviews, namely, you know, like Graciela Danielle and Chita Rivera, and you've got Debbie Allen and all of these big, huge people in the theater, in dance, in, you know, all across the board. How were you able to kind of cultivate those relationships?
Well, some of them, we were very lucky. So our team all came from dance, and including our DP, Matt Simpkins, who's been as well key in the whole process. He's like been above and beyond a DP for sure. it's like our work history. So I'd worked with Chita. So I contacted Chita and she said, I'd love to do it, but I'll only do it if Graciela does it. And I was like, sure.
Oh, all right.
Like, okay. You twisted my arm. So it was, Zach had worked with Jerry Mitchell. I'd worked with Stroh a few times. So it was kind of, and Matt had worked with Josh Bagass. I'd worked with Al Blackstone. My husband had worked with Andy Blankenbuehler. So it was just this web. And then we also had like, the book that it was inspired by, and I'll stop talking I'll hand over to Kadifa because she's key. We had the book that it was inspired by, Jazz Dance, The History of the Roots to the Branches by Wendy Oliver and Lindsay Guarino, and each chapter of that book is by different dance educators or historians, and so that's why we interviewed them. And then we kind of, each person in that book was like, oh, you have to, you know, like Bob Boris, you should talk to Melanie George, Sue Samuels, you should talk to, it was literally every person led amazing. Us to someone else, which was
amazing.
Just the most beautiful organic process.
That's awesome.
Debbie Allen was like a cherry on the cake though. So when we got her, we were very, very happy.
that was one of the like really interesting things is like, so when Debbie Allen started talking about who taught her,
I
knew Patrick Swayze's mother was a like well-known dance instructor. I knew that, but I was like, that's who taught Debbie Allen? Like that, that just like my brain exploded.
Me too.
I don't think we knew that.
We just always did it as a big conversation.
And so that whole section was just, we were sat on this sofa in her office and Zach was kind of opposite her interviewing her. We were just all like, it was just brilliant. I mean, I'll never forget that day ever.
That's amazing. That was one of those pinpoint moments for me while watching it though, because obviously, yes, she's a dance teacher and she's the mother of an incredibly famous actor, but to have her also be this really pivotal person in Houston, Texas, to start teaching in an integrative fashion to all of these little Black children who then grew up to be people like Debbie Allen. That was really remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
Cool story.
I also loved, I just loved watching Chita and Graciela. Like those were the sweetest. And then we were at Lincoln Center and they were bantering and people were laughing because they were just so adorable. Like, I love that. I love that every single time.
You haven't seen even a snapshot of the material.
Oh, yeah. We had an hour of that and it was just heaven. I mean, all you had to do was point the camera at them and go, oh. Because they were just, they're such good friends. And even now, the amount of times we've seen the film, I still laugh and smile. They're just so gorgeous. They're adorable.
Truly, the scene with them in the credits is just where, I don't know how old I am, and Graciela leans over. It's the sweetest thing in the whole world. I love it so much.
Yeah, I love it.
And it's literally, that is their dynamic.
Yeah, it reads. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of the photos as well we've got, the sheer respect and love they have for each other as they look at each other as the other one's talking is so, it's, we've got captured. It's just adorable. I love it. And they're like legends. I mean, it's incredible.
So Khadifa, you talk now, you know, please talk about like once you got involved and the book and all of that. Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was more sort of being with Zach anyway in the dressing rooms and hearing his conversations about jazz dance. And I was a contemporary dancer to start with. So I was just like, there's nothing for me in jazz dance because I hadn't been taught that there was and didn't know the history. So, you know, boy, was I wrong, which was an incredible journey just to go on personally and sort of reading these wonderful conversations that they were having in the book was just, for me, it opened up a whole new kind of dialogue and a very kind of self-affirming process as a woman of color, suddenly mm-hmm. realizing there was an art form that spoke to me, was made by my ancestors that mm-hmm. I should have been proud of, but hadn't been taught ownership of that. And that's kind of where my mission was with the film, was mm-hmm. to give everyone a voice, start a conversation, but also make sure that we kind of knew so that little kids weren't feeling alienated by the stuff that they loved and the world they loved, because I love dance, but dance didn't, I think, always love me back, you know. So it's that kind of, let's try and get some love out there.
It's, you know, when you talk about like you know, as a person of color, not knowing about all the things our ancestors have done and all of the contributions, and I was just watching Questlove Summer of Soul documentary where it was like this whole Black Woodstock thing that like nobody knew about, you know? And it's like, what would happen for our community if we had actually known about all of the extraordinary contributions that our ancestors had made? And so I'm so grateful for this documentary because it taught me so much that I didn't know about the contributions that Black people have made. And I think what I can speak to as a Black person, what that did for me was remind me how worthy I am and how important it is for me to continue in my creative endeavors. Mm. You know, because the spaces, you know, just sort of tried to leave us out. They were like, we'll take this piece, but we don't really want you there.
Yeah.
What I find absolutely thrilling and amazing actually of the whole process was the fact that how aligned jazz dance and jazz music is with mm-hmm. just the history of America, full stop. It's so succinct to the journey of the Black people. It's almost kind of mind-boggling, really, how that
is an action. It's especially the Josephine Baker piece. I know it was just like a little snippet, but I had also remembered, because you all mentioned Shuffle Along around her, and the story of how she like lied about her age to like get into that show and all of that. Like, as soon as I saw the documentary and that little piece, like all that stuff just came back to me. And I just think about like, you know, the opportunities that were so limited, but the people who fought and did whatever they had to get into those opportunities, and how doing that, like, I mean, Josephine Baker, when I was little, even such a big icon for me. Yeah. I loved the Josephine Baker story in grade school. Shouldn't have been watching it probably, but I didn't care, you know? And so like seeing her in this documentary, it just, all those memories just came flooding right back. And there's just so many reasons I'm grateful for this documentary.
I must say, it's lovely for us to hear how this is being received.
Yeah. You know, well, I think, and I'm just going to piggyback off of Ebony's point as well, because there, as you guys are talking, I'm remembering certain things that I just watched in the documentary as well. And one of the main points that kind of really struck with me was that they said, you know, Black people have been creating and they are so willing to share everything that they create. But then what happens is that someone that has a little bit more social equity commodifies and codifies, you know, that creativity And then all of a sudden, everyone thinks that it was them in the first place. And we've lost that really intricate part of who actually put it into creation, who actually put it into the world and into the environment, which was, I mean, that was huge. That was really, really huge.
Yeah, because when the I cannot remember the woman's name, but that she was the educator. She was so awesome. And then when the list, you know, of people were given and she was like, that's an incomplete list.
Yeah.
And then she starts listing all these other people, which like a lot of them I didn't know. And I was like, ugh. This is like, oh no, you know, it was like heartbreaking, but wonderful, you know, because now I know them.
What was her name, by the way?
That was Melanie George. She was fabulous. Melanie George.
She was amazing. And I loved, she had like this fire behind her. She was like, listen, I am here to educate you all. I am here to fill in the blanks of this lack of education that we all have where regarding really everything Black history. She was really amazing. I really liked her.
Yeah, which is why we've interviewed her twice.
Oh, nice.
Makes sense.
Yeah, she's just, I mean, just so much knowledge and so much passion behind this subject matter. It was, she's just incredible.
Yeah, I think every art form needs an ambassador like that, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's what kind of pushes it forward if you can have these forceful ambassadors, not forceful in a bad way, but someone who's a powerhouse that can, you know, really create conversation and dialogue wherever they go.
They weren't, like Thomas de France says, they weren't given, they couldn't access courts of law, and you know, there was such a different path of life and opportunity because it was not equal.
Well, and every opportunity that they did take advantage of was then just kind of ripped away from them with the next law that came out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And sadly, I just don't think it's even, I mean, you think we've evolved, but then you look at society today and you're like, gee, Christ, where are we going?
It's crazy.
And you even see the repercussions of, you know, 400 years ago, kind of living today. Why is jazz dance not recognized as highly as the ballet world or the contemporary world? You know, that was another aim of Khadifa and I, is to kind of just raise the stakes and get that platform there for jazz dancers and for, you know, jazz companies, which are basically non-existent, and like, you know, actually get a way of earning money out of this as well. Not that it's all just about the money, but you know what I mean? Like, just work with your art.
Yeah.
What were some moments that were really impressive to you all, or that you felt were really important that didn't make it into the documentary for whatever reason, whether that's time, whether that's because it didn't serve the story? Like, do you have any? Because I know a lot went on the cutting room floor. So I'm just curious.
I think one of my kind of moments, and purely because, you know, when you grow up with him, it was a bit of a Michael Jackson moment, but, you know, we have material.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a great interview with Travis Payne, and we'll go back to that, I think, or to him. And it just, at the time we were editing and picture locking, it was when all that was kind of coming very, very, you know, high up in the media cycle. We just had to make a decision then. We didn't want, sadly, and yet, I mean, we've got very short clips of he's in there, as in MJ, but it's kind of something we did skip over because we thought it was best to. So that was one contributor that, I mean, there's several that didn't make the cut, purely because of the sheer amount of people that we had, but we wanted as many voices as possible because it's a conversation, as many opinions, viewpoints, and we couldn't have, well, I was the no, I want this to be 75 minutes, and they, you know, the cut was coming back over 2 hours or 3 hours or something. I was like, no way, this is not gonna work. So we basically whittled it down. So
it did seem, as I was watching, it did seem like there were very act one, act two, act three. It did feel very much like that. What made you decide what parts you did end up keeping? What were the, you know, the bullet points that you really wanted people to see?
So Kadifa and Joan, the editor, our editor was amazing, just brilliant. They, Kadifa and Joan worked really well at kind of creating a timeline and then spending the important moments of the film kind of within those certain parts of that timeline, and then kind of filling in the gaps if we needed to fill in the gaps and kind of go back and film somebody else to kind of get something else of that nature. But Joan and Kadifa kind of had a very clear kind of path, because it is literally written out for you. You know, there is a timeline you can follow.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I know Kadifa's internet's kind of breaking in and out a little bit, so she can't really hear all the time. But so I'm kind of talking for her a little bit. but I know as a, because I sat and listened and got into debates into that editing suite, and it was a very clear kind of mindset, a very clear kind of like, this is what we're going to do. Let's go through the timeline and get it all out, and all of the stuff that isn't necessarily included out as well.
I mean, there were a few sections that they're like in sections, aren't they? We would move around, see sometimes if they would fit better in a different place with the flow of it. We were trying to put Michael Bennett in at one point, and there's so many, and there's to the point that, like I say, it would be 3 hours if we included everybody. So, and you know, people know Michael Bennett. So I'd rather talk about Pepsi Patel and Fred Benjamin and JoJo Smith than talk about, I don't know. It was, you know, there were some decisions made, but Kadifa and Joan and Zach, because Zach was there, made, you know, all the right choices for sure. I think Joan was essential because she hadn't been obviously on the shoot with us. So she was coming in fresh and no biases. So she'd see something and go, no, that person said it the best. So, and then back it up, and we all would be like, oh, okay. And then you'd realize that you just preferred Cheetah saying it because I'm attached to Cheetah, or you said this person because I'm attached to that. And then you had to literally remove yourself and go, what's best for the film? We're working for the film. So, yeah.
Hard, man, isn't it?
I can't imagine. I'm the ideas girl, but I have no idea how to do anything with those ideas. So it's magnanimous that you even were able to get it all done and in a 75-minute film.
Well, it's 90, but you know, I knew that if I said 75, it would be more like 90. So I was being a bit.
No, yeah, that's good, because I was like, gosh, that, I mean, it still felt so full for 75 minutes. So I'm glad that you said it was actually 90.
but I was fine with that. What I loved, what Kadifa did and Joan, but her brain went to the, you know, I loved the, okay, what happened at that time in the news, what was happening politically. You know, so you tie it all together because it does, it's so important.
That was fascinating.
I think for me, that makes the film.
And the montages that kind of, I guess Joan is quite famous for, actually.
I saw that she did, Sam Rice Edwards did the Kevin McDonald Whitney documentary. And I saw that just before we'd just wrapped filming, and I saw it on a plane. I was going back and forth, East Coast, West Coast. And I said to Kadifa, you have to watch this. I really love how they move from one decade to the next. And it was really quick montages, and it had news clips. And so you knew what was happening in the world and where she was. So no narrator or anything. And then I looked up Sam, found that he was in London at the assembly rooms, because him and Nick run the assembly rooms. And so naively, I was like, I'd love Sam. And they were like, well, what's your budget? Sam's won loads of awards and is amazing. I was like, oh, I can't quite afford Sam. So, they said, well, Joan was his like first assistant, and so we had a chat with Joan, and we just kind of fell in love with Joan. So that was just amazing. But that was something I saw, and I was like, oh my god, that would be amazing. So
I do love that so much about this documentary, that there isn't a narrator. And it's so easy to tell where we are in the story, you know, because that's how you told it. Yeah, I love that.
And you know, there was a moment where we were like, right, we need to get a narrator. We went through all of the stages, all of the kind of like, God, we've got to do this, and we've got to get this story out. How can we do this? But actually, those montages just play such an important role and are genius. Actually, I'm really, really. It's like choreography itself.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It felt very choreographed. Awesome.
And actually, which Kadifa, if you can speak, she does edit like she's choreographing, like she's dancing.
Nice.
And that, yeah. I think that is the key. That is what makes this documentary, one of the many things, stand out for me. Mm. So Kadifa, if your internet's okay.
I think, I don't know, it just gets, but I keep losing everybody speaking and I get one word and then it goes and then everyone freezes and then I get a little bit. But I think you were talking about editing.
Yes,
yes. And yeah, Joan and myself, and I don't know, it's that kind of chemistry when you meet someone that you know just gets you without even having to explain anything. And that's what it was the first day that Joan and I worked together, and we just created this timeline of Black history in America. And that was the foundation of the film. And then you kind of do those peaks off of it and all of those moments. And as Lisa was saying, editing, like music, it was important that this film was done like a dance piece, because we are dancers. So me, Zach, and Lisa, we work in a dance language, and so does Matt, the cinematographer. So everything came from a dance-based background, and it's how we like to work and how we share a language, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so it was really important that we found an editor that understood that. And Joan was a former soccer player, so she understood movement, and she understood that kind of synergy that you need physically with people and how you have to push things back and forth but keep moving. So I think it helped, that kind of dancer soccer player, and she learned how to edit to counts of music, and we came up with a language of how many frames would a count be, things like that, which were really, really fun to just experiment with, you know, and count down. And she didn't realize, you know, thought it was funny that Zach and I would be dancing out decisions in the edit suite. We'd be like, oh, what about this? And then a double pirouette. And we both just be dancing, and she just sit there and watch and not sort of say anything, because that's how Zach and I kind of decide things sometimes. So that was a lot of fun.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm curious how you all decided on which dance centers to go to. Like that, how did you make those choices?
They kind of chose us, really. So it was more about, say, I approached Al. I knew I'd done his class. I knew his class was amazing. And at the time, that was at Steps. So then he connected me to Steps. Same for Josh Bagasse. He was happy to teach class. So they kind of arranged a couple of classes and then said, yeah, sure, we can film. BDC were also very supportive. So when we got Mache, that they kind of helped us kind of coordinate that. The Canadian jazz companies, that's where they rehearsed. So that was kind of, we just were like, okay, great, we'll see you there. And then locations for interviews, Kadifa was very specific about what kind of look she wanted for what city she was in and what, you know, so that was kind of fun too.
Just about the dance yeah, the dance films that inspired me. So New York had to look like Staying Alive, because to me that's what being a dancer meant, was John Travolta's hustle in Staying Alive. So everything in New York had to look like that, you know. So it was like finding the grimiest, dirtiest 80s looking dance studios
that
we could find, but that's where I wanted to be. And LA, it had to look more like a Hollywood musical, had to be very opulent, because again, when you think of LA and dance, you think of either music videos or you think of the golden age of musicals.
Yeah.
And so we kind of just built it around that image. And that's what Zach and I, when we were doing our sort of original, what do we want this to look like? We were in dance studios in London just playing around. And then we went to Paris for a couple of days and just got that sort of European dance vibe that we had seen in White Nights. And it just, you know, we were just really being led by the dance films that came before us, to pay homage to all of those, because that's, to me, was what dancing was. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to be but didn't quite get to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why I chose the dance school that we all ended up going to, because it looked like
faint. It looked like a New York loft.
I love that because that's a fantastic way in for people who are like not necessarily from a theater background, because even they have seen, you know, musical movies, dance movies, music videos. That's so just brilliant. It's brilliant.
And it ties in really nicely with who says it? Did Al say it? You know, everybody loves jazz dance. Everybody loves jazz dance. Even if you don't realize that they love jazz dance, everyone loves jazz dance because it's there. It's there for us. It's going out. It's all that kind of stuff. It's life.
And I would argue that jazz is the dance that you just do, even if you're a non-dancer. If you're dancing to music, you're jazz dancing.
It's like, improv. It's
what your body does.
Yeah. Like Camille says, it's in the community, it's in your blood, it's what you just do, you know. It's just, and I remember as a child, you know, I just would hear music and dance in front of either my grandparents, or I'd make something up on the front lawn, and I just thought I was living my best life.
But I used to choreograph Moses Tsiposas in my living room and just try. Like, it was terrible. I've been told many times that I'm more a mover than a dancer, and that's okay with me, but like the choreography that was coming from this body when I was 10, 12, 14 years old.
When you look at kids that just don't, they just move.
Yeah.
It's just actually so beautiful because it's so organic.
Yeah.
And I think actually the more I got pulled into the studio, so the codification, I lost that, and I then was afraid of it. Mm. So if someone said to me, oh, and then you just improv, I'd be like this whole wave of like, oh, just I'd rather you gave me the steps. And I find that really sad that was my trajectory. I just was more of a, no, I'm brilliant. I will make what you want me to do absolutely brilliant, and then put my own thing on it because I like to stand out or just upstage without really planning to, but that was that was an element of my personality, obviously.
I'm not upstage, that's a whole other documentary in that whole, in that whole thing. Why do we lose touch of our inner child? What is that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, though. I mean, it is funny to kind of think about it, but it's so true. My trajectory was very similar to Lisa's in that, you know, like I loved Broadway. I loved it so much that it didn't matter that I was the size that I was or the shape that I was or, you know, whoever I was on that stage. Like when I got there, I would just do it. And then through the course of actually doing it professionally, you're just almost beaten down to a point. You're told so many times that you're not enough, or you're not really a dancer, but that's okay because your arms are really beautiful. So just move your arms and make a big face and nobody will even look at your body. And so you're told that enough times that it's like, oh, okay, so I'm just going to stop trying, which is unfortunate. But it also, it kind of goes to the idea of being a child and not being told by anybody that you can't do anything. And then there's a certain point that I don't know what the age is. I don't know what it is, but every person hears it from that threshold of childhood into adulthood that you just can't act that way anymore.
And do you know what? There's pros and cons to both ways. You wouldn't have elitism if you wouldn't have like the shows that we have today if you didn't have the elite training. But you wouldn't have the flavor if you didn't have where it comes from. It's a big marriage, and I'm guessing that the argument's always going to be there. You know, the argument's always going to continue. Hopefully, it might just continue in a more open way. But hopefully, that's what this film will do. Hopefully, that will be a little what we've, in a small way, have kind of like started our own little kind of like legacy of opening up people to get them talking more. Why not?
The think tank that I run with some friends, we took a night to watch Uprooted. And one of the people in our think tank, she was about to later that weekend do jazz dance with some underprivileged kids. And they're supposed to give a lesson, but also like teach a dance class. And so she watched it and she was like, I mean, it just exploded her mind like it does so many of us, but also, you know, she was trying to think how she could express some of the information to the kids, but also like provide them the freedom to know that like, this is where it comes from. And so like, we're all included in this narrative and we're all included in this story. This isn't just for these people or just for these people. Mm-hmm. And I think Uprooted does do yeah. it's so important because yes, the codification can sometimes close people off, but also once you know that the inception of the thing is rooted in the background of your people and it's in your blood, then it can kind of like stop you or help stop you from getting so into the codification that mm-hmm. you can't also allow your body to just express itself.
Yeah.
And so I think the storytelling in this documentary really, really does help with that.
Yeah.
I also wanted to say what you all were saying about the freedom of dance. It just kind of went back to what Zach was saying at the beginning of our conversation about jazz music. And I immediately think of like scat singing, or I think of free jazz, you know, and, it's like, they really are so aligned. They're just so aligned. I wonder, is there going to be like a curriculum for this documentary? Because it's well, just like,
yeah, we have got some educational packages available online already, okay. But you have to be part of an educational institution to be able to access that. And there's also, we're working on like a bigger kind of live tour educationally.
Okay.
So we're kind of digging into that. Hopefully that'll kind of start summer, fall, and then continue. Because that is, you know, a very important part of our kind of mission. Yeah. So there is. I mean, we have teaching guides and videos that are shorter, and like four different videos that we created that's easier for the classroom. That was our starting point. So I will build out from there.
That's exciting to have the tour also, because it just like comes. I mean, of course, in COVID, like the beginning of COVID, we couldn't do that. But now that we're like, things are getting a little bit better. I mean, it's something where like, will you all also maybe teach a little bit like in terms of dance, will you teach dance a little bit too?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
It's just so important because you know, we talk so much about inclusivity and accessibility, but when you feel like it's not for you, it's hard to get into that.
Right.
So if you all are bringing the fact that it was started, you know, by your ancestors, and so it belongs to you just as much as anyone else, and here it is.
Right.
I'm so excited about the number of young dancers that are going to come out of that program.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's really exciting. I mean, it's a big concept as well.
Yeah, but I mean, it can be tailor made to what anyone wants. You know, mm-hmm. how much community dance classes? Who do you want? Are they guest artists? Are they from the film? Then full screening, and then, you know, we want a discussion panel ideally, so the kids can then talk about what they've seen and connect it to the classes and
yeah.
But it also can be scaled down to a much smaller event. So, it's exciting.
Will you keep us posted on when you all launch that so that one of our intermission shows we can announce that?
Absolutely.
Well, already the four kind of like parts, of the whole film kind of already is on our website. So that has already launched, but we will get further in.
Why don't we tell our audience what the website is right now, but we will also post it in the show notes as well. But what is that website?
Uprootedfilm.com.
Oh, that's
easy. And I can also follow on Instagram as well.
Yeah.
And that's just @uprooted.film. Is that right?
Correct.
We did a whole series on Smash, the TV show.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Which we loved. And we, I think, gosh, I mean, we did all of them, but we sometimes would do like two episodes of Smash in a day. Like we would record those two episodes. And so it got to the point where I was like looking at my notes going, wait, when did this wait, hold on. And it was like, it was so convoluted. And so at this point I was like, I'm just watching Uprooted and I'm going to enjoy it. And I will remember what I remember. And if I need to, I'll watch it again. And I obviously wanted to watch it again. So there you go.
So good.
It was good.
How long did it take you all to make the film? I'm curious about that. Because documentaries can take a real long time.
Zach. Can you put like a year on the idea?
I think we're between 2015 and 16, which was kind of when I chose
the Scoundrels, right?
Say again, sorry.
When was it? Was Scoundrels, wasn't it? So was that 2016?
2016, yeah, it must be 2016. Right.
And then I came on board 2017, and we started filming at the end of 2017 through the whole of 2018 in blocks because. You don't have all the money, I have to tell you.
Right.
You raise the money. You raise the money, you shoot. You raise the money, you shoot. Or you just get in debt. And we wrapped at the end of 2018. They did some pickups 2019 when we started the edit. And then we picture locked like end of August 2019. Mm. And then we started submitting to some festivals. But we hadn't done a sound mix. We didn't get all the kind of licenses. So we didn't have any high res archive stuff. We were like, well, let's just wait and see if this actually gets, you know, selected. And then we were selected, April was when we got the notice for Dance on Camera. That was in July. But we
had
to deliver
in May. What was the response from all of the other places that you had submitted to? What was the kind of response that you were getting?
We've had a really, I mean, it didn't obviously didn't get in everywhere because I mean, I
there's
guess
lots of competition.
Don't.
Yeah.
But we had, I mean, I think we did over 30 festivals and we won 12 awards. I think. So we had a really good run. And that's obviously finished now because of HBO.
Yeah. The July Dance on Camera, that was how I first saw it.
Yeah, that was the first time.
It was virtual.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, first time. And we were, yeah, that was a big, we were literally like.
And Khadifa and I still haven't seen it in a theatre yet.
Oh.
We will one day.
It's coming. Yeah. Damn pandemic. Yeah.
Because so now, if you live in another country, can you watch it on HBO Max? No, only the US. No, we do have international listeners, so right. We should let them know.
Yeah,
that.
Sorry, it's only the US, but we are, you know, we are working for other deals, like in all other countries, because everyone I've been getting a lot of. I go, is it in Europe? Is it in Brazil? Is it in, you know? And I'm like, it's coming. And it will get there. We just, this was the first offer and it was US only. So, yeah.
Okay. I'm a little curious about your backgrounds with film because you all have said you have dance backgrounds, but like how much background do you also have with film? And for any of you, was this your first documentary? Yes.
Couple of us.
Khadifa, you too?
Yeah,
girl.
This is my first doc. Yeah.
Wow.
Good job.
I know, right? Sheesh.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, all of us, it was our first documentary. Which is also why it's a challenge to raise money. Yeah.
Well, you just kind of from day one were like, I don't know what we're doing, so let's just do it. And you figured it out. Amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that kind of, I mean, we surrounded ourselves by people that gave good advice, which is great.
Yeah.
But we also went on what we just, like I say, I go off instinct and gut a lot, which sometimes gets me in trouble, but usually is the right trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, that naivety. I'd make one short film when they asked me about this. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. I think this is great. And because I was just so excited. It was like only a year after I'd started my production company. So I was only, I'd only been like making films or within that world for a year. I was in
theory. I've been working as working in videography and working. And it's funny that some of the kind of things that I'd wanted to do, I was working for a celebrity fitness trainer and was trying to say to him, like, make your fitness videos really, you know, change the way you film fitness, film it from internally. Let's show joints. Let's show this. Like, let's put some interviews in there. Let's make it. So everything that I was trying to get him to do for his fitness videos ended up in Uprooted because he wouldn't listen to me. And I'm like, right, I just have to do it myself and do it for my own things like that and find people that will kind of trust you, because when you are new at things, especially as a woman of color, I find that it's very hard to get people to trust that you know what you're doing. You know, it's this constant finding a way to make your voice heard. People have to understand that you do know what you're doing and that your instincts are good and that it's okay if you didn't go to this film school and it's okay that you didn't do this. Just let your work speak for itself. And so I kind of was like, if I can just make one film on my own terms, I can see whether my instincts are right. And then I can be like, okay, now I have some confidence in what I'm doing. And it's like, if it fails, at least I know. But if it goes well, at least I can say, okay, great. I did good and did bad and know where things went right and wrong. And I think for any first-time filmmaker or any creative, try and do that for your first kind of go, because it's a battle otherwise. You know, it'd just be so tricky.
Well, I think too, you always get stronger from the mistakes that you make rather than the successes.
For sure.
So I think it is really important to kind of stumble through some things.
Yes. And the very first thing I did completely bombed. So
I also think nothing, you know, you should just make up your own rules. You should, you know, you kind of know what you don't want. So then you go, okay, so then let's just not do it that way. Let's do it another way. And so people will either like it or don't like it, or they'll have an opinion and that's great, whether it's good or bad. So I think that's really important. And there's always going to be bumps. There's always going to be times where you're like, oh crap, I hadn't thought about that, or I didn't know that was going to be, you know, and then you learn from that and then you're better for the next time. And at the time it's stressful sometimes, but you always come out and you're just like, okay, well, that was great. It was an amazing journey. I mean, it was a humbling journey. And that's what I always say after. I was like, yeah, I know jazz dance. And then like a third of the way through, I was like, oh my God, I don't know anything. I'll just listen to all these amazing people. And that's where you kind of start to go, this is really important.
Yeah.
And if it's from the community, if it all started from community, it should kind of be done from a place of heart and from a place of soul and from the community that kind of do it and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it shouldn't be this big corporate thing. I'm a nonconformist. I don't conform to anything. So I just kind of blunder my way through life like that. But, yeah, no, if it should be done by people who love what it is that it is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, 100%. 100%. I'm also curious about, so since for all of you, this was your first documentary, I'm curious about how you got the rights for the book, right? You had to get the rights for the book, right? I'm curious about that.
Well, I don't think we had to get the rights. I mean, we spoke to them and said, you know, this is inspired. It kind of inspired the research. It's not based on the book. So we didn't have to get those rights, and they were actually very, you know, collaborative anyway, Wendy and Lindsay, because they're in the film. What we did have to get the rights for is all the music and archive.
Okay. All that archive footage was really fascinating to watch.
Yeah. And you can't do it without it either. You know,
you wouldn't be able to show
people what was. So, you know, when we had this massive bill to pay, I'd be looking at the film going, what can we lose? What can we lose? And I'd every time be going, there's nothing. And we'd already lost some stuff because it was too expensive, or some songs that were just crazy and it was for 7 seconds. I was like, absolutely no way. Which still breaks my heart. But you know, that's what
That's what my job is, sadly. I'm the bad guy most of the time.
Producer is always the bad guy.
You were never the bad guy.
I try and make all their dreams happen, and then you have to make those horrible decisions.
We still haven't gone to Africa yet. I'm just saying.
Oh, they kept going on and on about that. That's the episodic. You need to film in Africa. And I was just like, oh my god,
that would, I mean, really honestly, that would be a fascinating shot.
We absolutely have to. But at the time I just like, let me get through this, like
all you needed to do was say the word Africa and she'd be like, shut up.
Someday it'll happen.
Yeah, it will. And because that is actually really important. There's a lot of places that we didn't get to go to that we will, that are on our list.
Very cool. Yeah. Ebony, okay. Did you have any other questions that you could think of?
Well, the last one, and this just comes from somebody who I'm so encouraged by the fact that this was the first documentary for you all. But I'm curious, like the very first step, like if you take things step by step, when you're first time doing something, what for each of you was like, sort of like your North Star?
I think for me, it was all about trying to get as many voices as possible, talking to as many different people. Like, how do we go about doing that? Who do we go and speak to? So I think my moment was not quite such a small moment. It was like, right, let's get everybody. Let's get everybody and talk to everybody. But yeah, she's gone a bit quiet. So, but for me, I think... that relationship between movement and music. Kadeep and I share such a similar kind of like sense of rhythmical style or just music style. Even if it kind of goes against the grain, even if it's not kind of like legitimately of 1955 or something, we just kind of like mixing it up a little bit. And actually the relationship between movement and music was... just key, because it's dance, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
My North Star was, I think, the process, the relationship building, and the trust between us as a team, because we'd never worked together before. I'd worked with Matt before. So it's allowing it to go in the way that it's being pulling you. So rather than going, oh no, I thought it was going to be this, just be open enough to go, oh wow, yeah, and also looking at it broadly to go, well, what's missing, what do we need? That was a lot of things, so there's obviously lots of stars in my sky. So that, you know, I would say is the most important.
I had a few that went along, like little moments of going, because you know, you kind of felt like for 3 years you were always on it, this film becomes your life, so you're just immersed in it. But for me, I got into the edit suite, and in that same week, I got a job on The Lion King as a dresser. And it was the first time I'd been backstage at a musical surrounded by people that looked like me. And so suddenly it made telling the story so much easier. And it just changed everything, and things that, you know, that I've been sort of dealing with just kind of changed. And it just became that moment where you had legitimacy to voice. And having someone like Joan in the edit suite, and, you know, Zach and I've been friends for years, so I've always had his kind of support, as it were. But I know what it is to have someone that kind of thinks exactly the same way as you do. And having to learn and having to like bring in new collaborators. So having Lisa kind of bring in that fresh perspective, it all helped. So when you finally got to that moment where you could put all those pieces fit together, as opposed to just were sort of chunks floating in your orbit, when we got into the edit and I got those supporting cast of people, and I will always credit these performers at The Lion King and the some of my friends on the dressing team as just being the people that glued it all together. And it was like being back at school, because we laughed at the same stuff I was laughing at when I was a teenager and didn't have all those kind of angst and all those kind of, it was before I'd experienced racism kind of in that way. So it just took me back to a place where I was definitely my person. And so it was a very, very late law style, but it happened, I think, at the right time.
That's awesome.
I love it. I love it. I think that's a perfect place to end.
Yeah.
If you all could, first of all, just provide where people can find the film again. And then if you have social medias that you, you know, personally want to share, you can do that as well.
The film's available Thank HBO you. Max in the US. The website is uprootedfilm.com. Instagram is our main kind of social media, which is uprooted.film. I'm LDR Creative LLC, or Lisa Dolmal-Reeve. Yeah, that's me.
I'm at Zach Nemerin, so it's just my name on everything, really. But I'm actually off the back of this, and it's always been something that I've wanted to do for decades and decades. I'm starting up my own jazz company at the moment, and I've been doing this for about 2 years already, but like actually doing it now properly. So that's the Jazz Corps, if you want to have a little look.
Can you spell that out?
The Jazz Corps, as in the core of something. So
okay, C-O-R-E.
C-O-R-E, yeah.
Perfect, okay. And then Khadifa?
I'm just on Instagram. I've cut myself off on social media. I'm like, so it's just Khadifa Wong, and it's just Instagram.
Perfect, all right. Well, thank you all so much for this. This was just a joy.
Such a pleasure.
Freaking obsessed with this doc. I want everyone to watch it.
Thank you.
And I look forward to the educational tour and the series. Crossing Great. Our fingers for you.
And seeing you guys go international with the viewing of Uprooted, the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. We'll keep you posted.
Yes.
Thank
awesome.
You.
Thank
Please
you so
do.
Much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Theater Geeks Anonymous. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at
TGABWay and on Facebook at Theater Geeks Anonymous.
And if you want to tell us how much you love us or you have a great story about one of the shows we've talked about, drop us a note at
TGABWay@gmail.com. You can also support us by going to patreon.com/TGABWAY. Until next time, geeks!
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.